Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 258 in the series. It is February 17th. And to my right, the very dimply Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Look what I have here. I brought some spackle in.
Great.
Yeah, because
fill
those,
in my dimples?
Those dimples are just too deep. We have to spackle them.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Whatever fills in the creases, I'm all for it.
We have Shantae Garth, our producer, in the booth, and we have classic radio shows all the way till 2 a.m. A great lineup. We have Dragnet to start things off, starring Jack Webb from 1950. Then it's The Great Gildersleeve going back to 1942, starring Hal Perry. And then A Good Mystery on Murder at Midnight from 1947. That's our lineup. We will be here till 2 a.m., and we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote, right, Lisa?
We sure are. The movie of the night, of this hour, is Life is Beautiful.
Oh, and what do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's a tribute play to Gilda Radner, playing right now at Mercury Theater.
And it was
Chicago.
Written by one of her best friends, right?
It was written by one of her friends from Saturday Night Live.
Very good. All right, folks, the number to call right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fourth caller, and you'll get to play the game with us on the air. We'll be right back. All right, ready to play our game, Lisa?
I sure am, Carl.
All right, so should we get our caller on the line?
Let's see, we've got Kevin on the line. Hey, Kevin.
Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Hello.
Hi, how are you, Kevin?
Good.
Good. Well, are we not going to play our little theme song, Carl?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's play our theme song. Hang on a second, Kevin.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All right. There it is.
Now we can talk to Kevin.
Now we can talk to Kevin. You're right, Lisa.
Kevin, you ready for Crack the Quote?
I'm ready. I don't know how good I'll do, but I'm ready.
All right. Well, whatever you do is better than Carl, so we'll go with that. The movie is Life is Beautiful. I will give you three quotes. One of them is actually from the movie. It's your job to tell me which one it is, okay?
Okay.
All right. Number one. No, no, no. A different language is a different vision of life. Number two. No, no, no. The limits of my language mean the limits of my world. Number three. No, no, no. Don't ask me anything. I don't speak German.
Oh, boy.
Well, not having seen the movie, I'll say number two.
All right. Carl, you have to agree or disagree?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say two.
All right, you want to go with two?
I'm going to go with Kevin.
All right. So you guys say, no, no, no. The limits of my language mean the limits of my world. Okie doke,
Sean. No, no, no. Don't ask me anything. I don't speak German.
You guys were so close, though. It was number three.
We were only one off, Kevin.
You were one off. Kevin was close. Carl, not so close. But Kevin,
we were one off either way.
Yeah.
Kevin, you are a winner either way. You won two tickets to Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago, written by Gilda's lifelong friend and Saturday Night Live writer Alan Zweibel. And it's a tribute, of course, to Gilda Radner. So you've won two tickets. So I hope that you enjoy the show. And thank you so much for playing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Kevin. Take
care, Kevin.
All right, Kevin's a big winner. He won some great tickets. We will have another Crack the Quote game by Cat's Pride in hour two, and then again in hour three. You'll have two more chances to win tonight. All right, our phone number is 312-981-7200. That's also our text in line. We love getting texts from our listeners. Please do text us, 312-981-7200. Right, Lisa?
I'm reading all of your texts. The last text that came in said Lisa Wolf for president. So,
yeah,
it wouldn't work out well, but that's a very
sweet
sentiment.
You would be the first woman president.
I would, but
that
I would
be great.
Awful.
I would vote for you.
I would not vote for me.
I would. I would vote for you.
Okay. But thank you.
All right. It's time for Dragnet. And you know what? Our fun fact was all about Dragnet this week.
It sure was.
Right?
Check our Facebook page and check out our Dragnet fun facts.
All right. Dragnet was a police procedural. Came to radio in 1949. Lasted all the way to 1957. 9 seasons on the air. And these were true crime stories of closed cases. They actually went into the L.A. Police Department and they handed them closed cases, and their writers would take those cases and dramatize them for the radio and TV show. It was a great series. Jack Webb was the star. He played Los Angeles Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday. This is an episode called The Big Job. It's from April 27th, 1950. Here now is part one of Dragnet.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Bunko Fugitive Detail. You receive information an escaped criminal is hiding out in your city. He's dangerous. He may be armed. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, April 27th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working a night watch out of Bunko Fugitive Detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Blaine Steed, captain of Bunko Fugitive. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from communications, and it was 6:45 p.m. when I got to room 38, squad room.
Hi.
How are you?
How about some dinner?
Well, we got one to check out first. Here's the teletype. Skipper just brought it in.
Thanks. From San Rafael, huh? Pick up and hold for this department one Alfred Garvey. Wanted for suspicion, forgery, robbery. This man poses as a fingerprint expert from San Rafael Police Department.
Here's his mug pulled from the record bureau.
Mm-hmm. We're informed Garvey is registered at the Fairdeal Hotel, your city. Where's that?
Over near First and Broadway.
Yeah. Please advise us on his arrest, and officers will arrive with warrant signed Chief Police Frank Kelly, San Rafael, California.
Shouldn't take long to pick him up.
All right, we can eat later, I guess.
Hi.
Hi, Max. What are you doing around? I thought you took off on vacation.
I am. Just came back to pick up some stuff from my locker.
Soft touch?
Sure. Listen, the wife's got the car there. Are you guys going anywhere near North Main and Daly?
Yeah, we're going to leave right now.
Oh, okay, let me grab my coat.
All right.
You live out near Highland Park, don't you, Mike?
Yeah. Wife took the kids shopping in the car this afternoon. Had to get them shoes for our vacation. Could sure scuff up the toes in a hurry.
All right, you all set?
Let's go.
Where are you going on your vacation?
Big Bear. Gonna stay the whole 3 weeks. The in-laws own a cabin up there. They even pay the utilities for us.
It's pretty nice.
Only one trouble.
What's that?
They're coming with us.
Oh.
Where'd you park?
In the captain's stall.
All right.
I'll ride in the back.
Okay.
You two still working on that Valley case?
No, we washed it up Monday.
What's this one?
Teletype from San Rafael. I want some guy picked up. Here's a mugshot.
Who's Richards going to work with while he's gone, May?
I don't know. What's the crowd up ahead?
Oh, yeah. Friner's convention. I forgot they were having a parade tonight.
You better stay over to one side. I think we can get through all right. Watch those kids there.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the place up ahead, isn't it?
Fair deal, yeah.
We got to stop by this hotel a minute, Max. You want to wait here?
I'll come in.
Now, you just...
a big turnout for the parade, huh?
Yeah, it's a big crowd.
Fair Deal Hotel. Look at those rates. 35 cents a day, $2 a week.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
Police officers, would you look at this picture, please?
All right.
Maybe registered as Alfred Garvey.
Garvey? Sure, came in yesterday. The picture makes him look old.
Is he in now?
Well, let's see. Garvey, room 307. The key's gone. He must be in.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Elevator's down there at the end of the hall.
Okay.
The elevator's in use.
Let's take the stairs.
I'll wait for you here. I want to see the parade.
Okay, Mike. Never seen it to fail.
Sam.
Stairs. Every time my arch is hurt, we get a thief to check who lives upstairs.
Just one more flight.
Yeah.
Uh,
305, 307. Door's open.
Let's have a look. Come on.
It's empty. Nothing in the closet.
Yeah, pretty fast checkout.
Came from downstairs.
The lobby, come on.
Yep.
Come on, hurry up.
Yep.
Hey, stop him! Stop that guy, police! Police!
It's Maxwell.
Max. Max, are you all right?
He went out the door, blue suit.
It was Garvey. He shot your friend.
Call an ambulance.
He ran out the door. He shot your friend.
Come on, Ben, call that ambulance, will you? Hey, you. Did you see a man come out of this hotel?
Huh? What'd you say?
Did you just see a man come out of this hotel?
Devil? I don't know.
All right, Ben, you go that way. I'll check up this way.
Yeah, right.
What's the matter? Watch where you're going, huh?
Did you see a man running up this way just now about my height, blue suit?
Huh? No, I didn't see anybody. Did you see anybody?
Hey! Hey, boy.
Yeah, you want a paper, mister?
No, listen, did you see a man running by here a minute ago in a blue suit?
Well, maybe. I didn't notice him. You want a paper?
No. I'm sorry. Sorry, lady. Ben! Ben, over here!
Yeah.
Did you spot him?
No, we're gonna need help.
All right, come on.
I called the ambulance! You better help your friend. He's bleeding. I don't know what to do.
Ben, get a hold of communications. Get some help out here.
Right.
The guy came down in the elevator. It was Garvey. Your friend tried to stop him. Garvey shot him right in the face.
All right, stop yelling,
huh? He was terrible. Now, look, he's bleeding. You better do something.
Will you shut up? Max. Max, how is it?
Yeah. Chest hurts.
Yeah, all right. Easy, huh?
Garvey came out of the elevator fast with a gun.
All right, take it easy now.
Yo, I got communications. They're blocking off the area.
That's fine. Watch that front door. Will you keep those people out of here?
Yeah, yeah.
Chest.
I'll be here in a minute, boy.
Call the wife, Eleanor.
Ambulance is here.
Yeah.
He looks bad.
Well, he's not going to get any worse.
Hmm?
He's dead. The name on the personnel report said John Warren Maxwell, Sergeant, Los Angeles Police Department, badge number 10377. Nearest living relative, wife, Eleanor Jean Maxwell. Dependents, John Maxwell Jr., 6 years. Deborah Lee Maxwell, 2 years. Death in line of duty, April 27, 7:15 p.m. John Maxwell's body was removed from Georgia Street to the county morgue. At 7:45, a special detail of men from Homicide and Bunko Fugitive were on the scene to aid in the investigation of the killing. The neighborhood where the Fairdeal Hotel was located was covered for a half mile around. By 9 o'clock, the parade was over and the area was cleared. We had a single lead to work with. In checking out the different taxicab stands in the neighborhood, we found out that 3 separate fares had been picked up within 2 blocks of the hotel 4 minutes after the shooting. Ben and I went to the offices of the taxicab company. The cabs in question were called in and the waybills were checked. The times of the 3 different trips were listed, and so was the address of each destination. We copied down the addresses and then interviewed the drivers.
We're going to give each one of you half a dozen pictures. Like to see if you can identify any of them as passengers you picked up tonight near the Fairdeal Hotel.
All right, here you go.
There you are.
4, 5, 6. Check them carefully, please.
Here are yours right here. Take a good look at each one of them.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Now, fellas, take your time. Look them all over real good before you make up your mind.
Here. Here's the one, Sergeant. No mistake.
Let me see. Where'd you pick up this man?
About a block from the hotel. I drove him to a place on 14th Street. Same address on the way bill.
Ben? Yeah, Alfred Garvey. Ben and I, along with Ricketts and Chandler from Homicide, drove out to the 14th Street address. Another small, transient hotel. The clerk on duty identified Garvey from his mugshot. He said the suspect had called at the hotel at about 7:45 that night and asked to see one of the guests, Mrs. Lorraine Thomas. The clerk said he told Garvey Mrs. Thomas was out, that she hadn't been there for 4 days. Ricketts and Chandler went on stakeout in the lobby of the hotel, and Ben and I went up to the second floor to stake out Mrs. Thomas's room. Friday, 11:25 a.m. Lorraine Thomas returned to the hotel and was taken into custody. We took her to Homicide and questioned her for more than an hour. She admitted that she was acquainted with Garvey, but that's all. 1 o'clock. We went to Clifton's cafeteria for lunch.
Here, take this tray.
Thanks.
Silverware?
Get here a little earlier, you wouldn't get sick.
Look at that line running clear out of the street.
You were the first one he ran to after the shooting.
Well, Garvey doesn't have many friends in Los Angeles. Maybe that's why he looked me up. I'll have the mixed green salad, too.
What kind of work does Garvey do, do you know?
He told me he was in the Merchant Marines.
Coleslaw.
Some of that potato salad, please. Do you know what he does in the Merchant Marine?
He told me a steward. French dressing.
Do you know any of his friends in town?
No, I don't. Rye bread. Can I have an extra butter, please?
Oh, French roll. What kind do you want, Ben?
Now, give me some of those biscuits. Thank you.
Does Garvey usually stay at the Fairdeal Hotel when he's in town?
I don't know.
That split pea soup sure looks good, and...
We told you that the police up north were looking for him.
Yeah, I know you did. Like I told you, I've been out with him a few times. That's all I know about him.
He must have introduced you to some of his friends.
I'll have the prime ribs there, rare. That piece there.
How about it? Did you ever meet any of his friends?
Yeah, one or two. No gravy.
Meatloaf, brown gravy. Remember any of the names of his friends?
I just met him, that's all. I don't remember.
Let me have a roast turkey. Go kind of heavy on that dressing, will you? Did you ever go out with any of them?
No.
Why do you think Garvey went to your hotel after the shooting?
I don't know.
Maybe he figured you'd hide him.
I don't know why he should.
He killed a man and headed straight for your place. Doesn't make you look too good.
I can't help that. I like some of those string beans, please.
Miss Thomas, you know it's going to go hard on you if you're holding back information on Garvey.
I'm not.
Why don't you take some of that summer squash, Joe? It's good for you.
Well, I can't eat that much. When did you first meet Garvey?
About 3 years ago, up in St. Helena.
You might as well keep your nose clean.
How do you mean?
We're going to reach you, Miss Thomas. You might as well tell us all you know.
Look, if Garvey's killing people, I don't want to have any more to do with him.
We do. Now, where is he?
I told you, I don't know.
Squash, please.
You said you had a little boy, didn't you, Miss Thomas?
Do we have to talk about it now? I thought we were going to have lunch.
How old's your little boy?
He's 7 years old.
Where is he now?
He's in school up in San Francisco. Isn't his line going awful slow?
It's lunchtime. You know that cop that Garvey killed last year?
Mashed potatoes, country gravy.
Hear what I said?
Yes, I know he killed a cop.
He had a little boy, too.
There's nothing I can do.
No potatoes, thanks.
Yeah, there's something you can do, Miss Thomas. You can tell us where Garvey is.
If I know, I'd tell you.
French fries, please.
You're kidding us, Miss Thomas, but we're not going to kid you. You know a lot more about this than you're telling us.
Maybe I do, but I'm scared.
Who are you afraid of?
Look, why can't you count me out of this? I don't want any part of it.
You're in all the way. The only way you're going to get out is to tell us what you know.
He'll kill me. Suppose something happens to me, nobody's going to worry about my kid.
You don't have to worry. He's not going to find out.
No dessert, please.
They'll both kill me.
Both? Who's the other one?
What's the use? Trouble no matter what you try to do. Nothing but trouble.
Garvey's working with somebody, is that it?
His name's Jack Fleming.
Yeah?
They made me promise to cover for him. Give him a place to hide out whenever the heat was on.
Then you know where they are.
No, I don't. That's the truth.
Why do they need a place to hide out?
You said Garvey killed a cop.
What about Fleming?
Hey, Joe, we better move along.
Oh, I'm sorry. What about Fleming?
We're going to pull some jobs.
All right, we can skip the dessert. Come on. I'll take a check for all of them.
Let's go.
What kind of jobs? Where?
Hold up. Tomorrow night. Three Kings Liquor Store out in Wiltshire.
Let's sit down.
They're both the same, Garvey and Fleming. They can't hold a gun without using it.
Here's the table. Oh, you dropped your tray. I'll get you some more.
Don't bother. I'm not hungry anymore.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation.
I tell you, they were going through a cafeteria there. Hear that? And they were ordering turkey and different things. It was making me hungry, Lisa.
You're kidding.
I want the turkey with extra gravy like he wanted.
I brought you a treat
tonight. Mashed potatoes, but no dessert.
I brought you a dessert.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right, that's the first portion of Dragnet. We'll have more in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
One thing I know for sure, Lisa Wolf.
Yes, Carl.
That we are listening to Dragnet.
I'm with you on
with
that.
With Jack Webb. And there is a really fun fact. It's a fun fact on our Facebook page about it.
We post fun facts every week.
We do. So we post all kinds of fun stuff.
We post all sorts of good things. Check out our Facebook page for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we have the socks here on WGN now. You know that, don't
you? We do. We've got two socks, baseball caps waiting for us.
I wonder
right
if these are ours. I don't know. I'm not going to just take it because I don't want to go to jail or anything.
Okay.
But do you know why stadiums are so cold? Speaking of the socks, do you know why stadiums are so cold?
Why are stadiums so cold, Carl?
Because of all the fans.
That really cools things off.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. We're listening to Dragnet from April 27th, 1950. The Big Job with Jack Webb. Here's the conclusion.
Saturday, April 29th. Last rites were held for Sergeant John Maxwell, and he was buried at Holy Cross Cemetery. A guard of honor from the police department was present, along with most of the men Maxwell had worked with in Bunko Fugitive Detail. The chief of detectives delivered a short eulogy, and then one of the men from the department band sounded taps over the grave. We got back to the office at noon, checked in at the record bureau. A photocopy room had taken negatives of Garvey's and Fleming's coming out mugs and made duplicates that were distributed to all officers. The stakeouts continued at the Fair Deal and the 14th Street Hotel where Lorraine Thomas was staying. She was put under protective custody. Ben and I, Ricketts and Chandler, went on stakeout at the Three Kings Liquor Store on Wilshire Boulevard. It was a large, modern place, and it did a volume business, especially on Saturday night. Ricketts and Chandler covered the store from the outside. Ben and I were stationed in the supply room at the rear of the place, where we had the main counter and most of the store in full view. We set up a prearranged signal with a clerk on duty, and if and when Garvey and Fleming showed up, the clerk was to accidentally knock an empty bottle off the counter. We waited until midnight. Nothing happened.
This is the first customer in half an hour. It's kind of slow.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Here comes another one.
No sale. It's a woman.
The clerk sure got the jitters.
Well, I put in with him.
Well, I could go for a hamburger.
Why didn't you eat dinner?
I wasn't very hungry then.
Oh, I got an almond bar. You want it?
Yeah, thanks. Wait a minute. Another customer.
Yeah, man. Can't see his face too well with that hat on, can you?
That's Fleming. Come on. Police officers, get your hands up.
Watch it go. Oh. You're hitting.
He's going out the front. Come on.
Ricketts and Chandler stopped him.
Yeah, he's down. Watch him. Get the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, here it is.
That's Fleming, all right. Ricketts, call an ambulance.
What's the score?
Looks like one in the shoulder and legs, too.
What about Garvey?
I don't know.
What do you think?
Fleming stopped all the slugs.
Yeah.
Let's ask him. The wounded suspect was treated at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital and then booked into the prison ward at the General Hospital. At 11 a.m. the next day, we questioned him, but he refused to admit that he even knew Alfred Garvey. We re-questioned Fleming for the next 3 days with no results. The stakeouts continued. The search went on. There was no response to our APB. Garvey was still at large. As far as we were concerned, there was only one way to get directly to Garvey, and that was through Fleming. We called on Lorraine Thomas again and asked her that if she'd try to get some information on Fleming, try to get him to talk and to tell her where Garvey was.
I'm not even sure if he knows where Garvey's hiding.
He must have a good idea.
Even if he has, he's not going to tell me. He wouldn't trust me that far.
He'll go further with you and he will with us. He won't even give us his name.
I'm afraid it's up to you, Miss Thomas.
Why can't you let me out of this?
All right, look, figure it this way. You knew about Fleming and Garvey. You knew they were in town. You knew what they were up to. You didn't break your back to save that dead cop's life.
Garvey shot him. I didn't.
You knew he was a killer. You knew he had a gun.
What do you want me to do?
Get close to Fleming. Visit him every day till he talks.
He doesn't trust me. I told you.
Then get him to trust you, will you? Do favors for him. He wants to contact friends to raise money for a lawyer. Help him do that. Run errands. Do anything for him within reason.
Suppose he finds out about the holdup that I told you about it.
He's got a long stretch ahead of him. He won't bother you.
They'll kill me if they find out. They wouldn't wait a minute.
They won't find out.
All right. Won't be my fault. Al did the shooting. He killed the cop. Let him square it up.
He'll square it with the court. There's only one trouble.
Yeah?
Maxwell's wife and kids. How does Al square it with them? On the morning of May 8th, suspect Jack Fleming was removed from his private room and wheeled down to the X-ray lab on the pretext of treatment. While he was absent, a dictaphone was placed in his room by a sound crew from the crime lab. Fleming was then returned. That afternoon, while Ben and I listened in on earphones in the next room, Lorraine Thomas paid her first visit to Fleming. We had briefed her on how to proceed in getting a suspect to talk, in particular, to reveal Garvey's hideout. It was a slow process. For the next 15 days, between the hours of 2 and 4 in the afternoon, Mrs. Thomas visited Fleming while Ben and I monitored their conversation in the adjoining room. For 15 days, despite all her shows of confidence, Fleming refused to confide. He was sullen and close-mouthed. Some afternoons, he would hardly speak to her. On the 16th day, his mood seemed to be improving.
Here. Let me fix that pillow for you, Jack. There. Is that better?
Yeah. That's good. Thanks.
I got in touch with Dave and Johnny like you asked me to.
Huh? What'd they say?
Well, they said they could get you the money for the lawyer the day after tomorrow. And Dave said he might be over to see you tonight.
Yeah, that's fine. Once I get a lawyer, I'll stop worrying.
I stopped by Donnelly's place, too. Pop Royce wasn't there. I'm going back tomorrow to see him. He ought to be able to help.
You've been okay, Lorraine. I won't forget it.
Oh, it's what friends are for. Jim, sure sorry you had to get it this way.
Forget it. I can give it back where it came from.
Say, I bought you some new magazines, a couple of candy bars.
Swell. Put them over here near the bed, will you?
Yeah, sure. Let me get them for you. There, Jack. See, I'll put them right here on this table. I'll bring you some more tomorrow.
That's fine. You're going to try and see Pop Royce again tomorrow?
Yeah, they told me he'd be in around noon for sure. If I don't see him then, I'll keep trying till I do.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, listen. Something else.
Sure, Jack.
Come here. I don't want to talk loud. The cops might have bugged this room.
Yeah. Sorry.
A little closer. Tonight, I want you to go to George's joint, the Blue Moon, down on South Flower.
Yeah?
And ask for George at the bar. He's usually around from 11 on.
Uh-huh.
Tell George you've seen me. He'll know it. Then tell him to take you to Al.
To take me to Al?
Yeah, Al Garvey. George knows the place.
Yeah. Okay, Jack.
And keep your mouth shut. Don't talk to anybody but George. He knows the place.
All right, Jack. We'll help you out.
Well?
Yeah.
It's a long wait.
Get paid. Let's go. 10:45 p.m. A detail of three cars followed Lorraine Thomas to the Blue Moon Tavern on South Flower Street. We parked down the block and watched her go in. At 15 minutes past 11, she came out with a small fat man in a dark blue suit. They got in a tan-colored coupe and drove south. The cruiser cars, using three-way radio, tailed the coupe alternately out through the Echo Park area and then back to the starting point at the Blue Moon Tavern. Lorraine Thomas went back into the bar with a man and 20 minutes later came out, caught a taxi, and took it to her hotel on 14th Street. We drove back to the office. It was 5 minutes past 1 a.m.
That's it.
I get it. Monco fugitive, Friday.
Lorraine Thomas, Sergeant. He showed me the place George did.
Where?
We drove past it. 1032 Alamo, apartment 3.
Is Garvey there now?
No. George said he's supposed to be there tomorrow in the afternoon, 5 o'clock. George said I'll have to go alone.
Are they watching the place?
I think so. Garvey's staying with another man. They got guns.
You know where Garvey is now?
George wouldn't tell me.
We can't afford to tip our hand. How do we know Garvey will be there at 5 o'clock tomorrow?
That's just it. We don't.
May 9th, 3 p.m. An immediate stakeout was placed at the suspected hideout. A detail of 20 plainclothesmen began filtering into the neighborhood in the vicinity of 1032 Alamo Street. A three-story apartment house at that address was checked thoroughly and then covered on all sides. Apartment 3 on the first floor was checked out, too. It was registered to a Thomas King, whom the manager identified as Alfred Garvey from his mugshot. To avoid pedestrian casualties, we toured the immediate vicinity between 3 and 4:30 that afternoon, advising residents and storekeepers to clear the street and stay inside. At 4:35 p.m., the men in the detail took up their assigned positions. We waited.
Hold that light, will you, Jim?
Yeah.
Hmm. Thanks. A lot of trouble for that punk Garvey.
Be more trouble if he doesn't show.
No such luck.
Hmm?
Tan coupe coming down the street behind us.
Same one we tailed last night.
A girl driving. There's two guys with him.
Yeah, well, Garvey's one of them. They're pulling up.
Ready?
Oh, wait a minute. All right, let's go. Police officers, hold it right there.
Al, cops! You don't get out.
Car.
Throw him in, Garvey. You haven't got a chance.
Al, break from the house!
All right, hold it, Ben.
That's it. Both of them.
Come on.
Both dead. Garvey. The other guy. Rotten case.
Rotten business.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. On August 2nd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 93, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. Jack Fleming, the only survivor of the holdup gang, was found guilty of several counts of armed robbery. Garvey's accomplices who aided him in hiding out were tried and convicted of being accessories. They are serving prison terms as prescribed by law. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
The Halls of Ivy is pleasant listening tomorrow on NBC.
All right, it really doesn't get any better than that. That's about the best detective series in all of radio. It was on for many, many years, 9 seasons on radio, and then it was on for 16 seasons on television. Jack Webb throughout the entire thing was Sergeant Joe Friday of the LAPD. That's an episode called The Big Job. Someone earlier texted in, wanted to understand why all of these Dragnet episodes started with the word big. And the reason for that was it was to focus on the word after big. So on this particular episode, it was called The Big Job. So this story talked about the job being done there, the heist, trying to arrest this guy because he killed an off-duty cop. But they would always focus on the word after big. That was what it was
kinda
all about.
Kind of like Mr. Big.
Mr. Big, yeah, from Sex and the City.
Yep.
All right, so that was from April 27th, 1950, Dragnet. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, Lisa, look at this. It's 11:59. We have just 1 minute, and it's top of the hour news.
Well, at least it's 1 minute before instead of 1 minute after, so we'll keep David happy
yeah.
up there.
Oh, I know. We want to keep
Are you happy, David?
We want David to be happy.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
You sound happy.
I've had chocolate today, so I'm good to go.
David, I have a very important question to ask you. When is beef the highest? When is beef the highest, Lisa?
The highest what?
Just when is beef the highest? David, do you know?
That question doesn't make any sense. Sorry.
I know I'm going to regret this.
Yeah, when is beef the highest?
Beef the highest?
When the cow jumps over the moon.
Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. I know. I knew that was coming.
I knew it. Both of the jokes I just told you were from friends in my apartment building.
You need new friends.
No, they're nice. They told me these jokes.
No, they just need a new sense
of
humor.
And I said I was going to say them. Randy and Meredith, I said I was going to say them on the air tonight, so hopefully they're listening.
Well, they went over really well, those jokes, so I'm glad that you said them.
They are. They're great jokes. You know, all of my jokes, David, are a little corny. You know, they're a little bit corny.
Just a little.
Just a little, but they're family friendly.
Right.
That's what this show is
all
about.
Family friendly. We keep it all on the up and up.
That's
here.
Right. Every once in a while, Lisa, she falls off the wagon
Carl.
A little bit. But other than that, so when we
Carl has too much wine to drink before he walks in.
Lisa's the one with the Roma wine.
The Roma wine.
When we come back from the news, it's the Great Gildersleeve. After that, Murder at Midnight.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David Jennings. It is 12:08 in the morning. Happy Sunday morning to you. We will be here till 2 o'clock in the morning playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Lisa Wolf and I are here every Saturday and Sunday. We're here 3 hours on Saturday, 3 hours on Sunday. And we play six of your favorite classic radio shows. You name it, Boston Blackie, Jack Benny, The Shadow, Inner Sanctum, The Whistler, Dragnet, which we just played. We have The Great Gildersleeve this hour. All your favorites. Just text us. Let us know what you want to hear. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we have all of these shows. Thousands and thousands of shows are available via digital download at our website, ClassicRadioStore.com, ClassicRadioStore.com. And when you go there, there's a pop-up. And on that pop-up, you know what's there, Lisa? On that pop-up? You know what's there?
What, Carl?
The three surprise boxes.
Yes, I know about the three surprise
boxes.
What
about them?
Well, we have three.
Yeah.
One of them is Classic Radio on CD.
Yeah.
One of them is Twilight Zone audio dramas on CD. And the other one is Classic Movies on DVD.
And TV. Classic Movies
okay.
and TV.
It is
mostly TV.
It's over $150 worth of product, and each surprise box is only $39.99, guaranteed to be a lot of fun. And everybody, and I mean everybody who has ordered these surprise boxes has loved them. We have gotten such great feedback from them. It's all new product, and you have a warehouse full of them, which is getting depleted as it goes. When it's gone, it's gone. And it's such a nice variety to send out, and we'd love to send it out to you again for only $39.99, and you will have hours and hours and hours of enjoyment from these surprise boxes.
Wow, that was really good.
Thanks.
Yeah, surprise box one is Classic Radio on CD. Surprise box two is Classic TV and Movies on DVD. I don't have a DVD player anymore.
I don't either.
I have a CD player, but I don't have a DVD player anymore.
I don't either.
But
either. Did you say either? Either.
Either, either.
I don't either.
And then the surprise box three is classic. Well, it's actually not classic Twilight Zone.
It's just
brand new dramas of the Twilight Zone on CD that I produced with Stacey Keach.
Right.
I think you're in some of them.
I am.
Even.
We've given some away here on WGN Radio.
So you can get a whole bunch of stuff for only $39.99, $150 worth of product. Brand new product in the cellophane. Just go to our website.
Already.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But did you say in the cellophane?
I said it was brand new. I think that was superfluous.
But did you say in the cellophane?
That's superfluous to brand new.
So how many syllables is
four.
That? Superfluous. My chin is
four.
Going down four times. Huh. That's a lot of syllables.
It is. It's a big word for you.
I know. You know what's coming up in just a few minutes?
Yes, I do. We've got the Great Gildersleeve.
The Great Gildersleeve.
A good comedy.
Yeah, and we're going to play our game right now. Cats, Pride, Crack the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
The movie this hour is Once Upon a Time in the West.
Ah, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, old movie.
I haven't seen that in a long, long time.
Nope.
All right, that's the number. That's the movie. So give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They are going to win tickets to see Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story at Mercury Theater Chicago.
All right, tickets
right now
to a great play, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll take the third caller. We'll play the game after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Okay.
Thank you, Roger. We appreciate your voice. I see you up there. We have Joyce on the line. Hey, Joyce.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Great to have you with us.
Thank Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
All right. The movie is Once Upon a Time in the West. I'll give you three quotes. All you have to do is tell me which one is the right one from the movie. Nothing to it, right?
Okay.
All right, Joyce. Number one, if the boot fits, buy every color. Number two, some trails are happy ones. Number three, get me some water from the well. I like my water fresh.
Number three,
get me some water from the well. I like my water fresh.
Yeah.
All right.
That sounds right to
you
me.
You like that one too, Carl?
I'm going to go with Joyce here on this
okay.
one.
Okay, Shante, help us out.
Get me some water from the well.
Yeah.
I like my water fresh.
And there
Joyce.
You go. Ding, 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 ding. Joyce, you are a good influence on Carl. Congratulations. You have won two tickets to Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's now playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago, written by Gilda's lifelong friend and Saturday Night Live writer. It's a tribute to Gilda Radner. And you can go see it at Mercury Theater Chicago. Check it out. And thank you for calling in. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take
Way
care.
To go, Joyce. All right, she's a big winner. And you know what, Lisa?
What?
Our listeners are going to be big winners, too, because we have the Great Gildersleeve. My only person that's not going to listen now
is your brother.
My brother, my crabby brother, Vince. He hates the Great Gildersleeve.
I know.
I don't know why. I wish he would give it more of a chance. You know, this is a great series. All right, the number to text in, 312-981-7200. We love getting texts from our listeners. But right now, let's go back to October 11th, 1942 for part one of The Great Gildersleeve.
Parquet presents The Great Gildersleeve. The makers of Parquet Margarine present each week at this time Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. Now let's join our friend, the Great Gildersleeve. We find him in the land of Nod, sleeping the sleep of a man who has put his car up on blocks, bought his full quota of war bonds, and saved 4.5 pounds of bacon fat. While outdoors, Jack Frost has been preparing a little surprise for him.
What is it, Leroy?
Are you asleep?
Not now. I'm not. What do you want?
Do you see what I see?
I don't see anything. Go away.
But look outdoors. Look out the window.
Daylight. Take it away.
No. Get up and look. Look at the trees. Look at the ground.
Daylight. It gets all over everything.
But I'm trying to tell you, Unc, it's been snowing.
Well, tell Bertie or somebody. Don't come by. Did you say snowing?
If you don't believe me, get up and look.
It can't be. 30 days, has September, April, June, and...
Here's a handful of it on the windowsill. Look.
By George, it is snow. Snow in October. Why, it hasn't snowed in October since the blizzard of 88. And that was in January.
Look. You can see your breath, Hunk.
Ooh, it must be freezing.
You're darn right it's freezing. The thermometer's down to 25. And you know that hole that Mr. Clanahan dug in the front yard?
Yes.
The snow's filled it up. You wouldn't know it was there.
Oh, my goodness. The water pipes will freeze.
Yeah, they will.
That Clanahan's a fine water commissioner. I've been after him for 6 days to get that hole filled in. Ooh, listen to that wind. Close that window, will you, Leroy?
Come on, Unc. The house won't get any warmer till you get up and start the furnace.
Leroy, I wish you wouldn't drag in these unpleasant truths so early in the morning.
Well, come on, get up.
Don't stand there staring at me. Go down and tell him I'll be right down. Tell Bertie to keep the coffee warm.
All right, go back to sleep if you want. But Bertie's making buckwheat cakes.
Yeah, I don't know. Buckwheat cakes? Oh, buckwheats. One side. Gang away. The floor's cold. Where's my bathrobe? Where's my bathrobe? Bertie? Oh, I slept in it. Never mind. I found it, Bertie. Hold the buckwheats.
More coffee, Uncle Mort?
Thank you, my dear.
Pass your cup, will you? Hold it still.
I can't. I'm shivering.
I'll hold it, Mr. Gilsleeve.
Ooh, that's worse. Grab it, somebody.
I'm sorry. I'm all over goose pimples.
Why don't you go put a sweater on, Bertie?
I got on so many sweaters now, I can hardly bend at the elbow, and my teeth chattering like a pair of dice.
Yeah. Marjorie, take a look at that thermometer there, will you?
I can tell you from here, Uncle Mort. It's cold.
Yes, we'll have to do something about this. While you're up, my dear, hand me a cigar, will you?
What do? All sit around it and warm our hands?
No, Leroy. We go out to the garage and we bring in some firewood. And I do mean you.
Oh, me and my big mouth.
I'm going to call up Clanahan right now before those water pipes freeze.
Better put your rubbers on, Leroy. That snow is wet.
Oh, I don't need any.
Put your rubbers on, young man. Hello. I want to speak to Commissioner Clanahan. He won't be in? Fine water commissioner he is. And you can tell him I said so. The commissioner is not expected in today. And if anything happens to those pipes, it's on him. Oh, Leroy, close the door! As soon as Leroy comes back, I'll go down and see if I can start old Vesuvius. Bertie?
Yes, sir?
Bertie, have you ever had any acquaintance with a furnace?
Oh, I know how to work it. You just fiddle with that little doohickey out in the hall.
But that was last year. Last year, we were burning oil. With coal, there's a little more to it.
Oh.
Nothing difficult, you understand. I think you'd be very good at it.
Thank you.
Anybody who's as good as you are with a shovel.
Oh, the shoveling.
Well, that comes into it. But it's not all shoveling.
Well, I don't know about that. I know how to run that doohickey. I ran it last year.
That doohickey is called a thermostat, Bertie. I wanted to speak to you about that. As I remember it, you ran it last year at about 80.
You said 70.
Yes, and I used to set it at 70. But the minute I got out of the house, you sneaked it up to 80.
Well, sometimes it gets colder than others.
Now, this is serious, Bertie. This year, we got to save fuel. The temperature is going to be set at 65 degrees, and that's where it's going to stay.
65? Maybe it's going to stay, but I ain't.
Oh, you wouldn't leave us, Bertie.
Yes, ma'am. I can't work in those 65 degrees. I'll go on away from you.
Oh, no, Bertie.
I'll go for some work for somebody else if I have to.
Calm yourself, Bertie, and just remember this. If anybody offers you more than 65 degrees this winter, they're traitors.
Huh?
You don't want to work for traitors, do you, Bertie?
No, sir, not me.
Well, remember that. The government says we've all got to help save fuel, Bertie. The way to do it is to hold the temperature down to 65 degrees. Besides, 65 is warm enough for anybody.
65 when we hatch no eggs.
No, but it'll keep you on your toes. It'll keep you from falling asleep at the broom.
Well, if the government says so, I guess that's the way it's got to be. But if it's all the same to the government, I'm going to buy me some woolies and sew myself into them.
Now I'm going to start looking at fur coats.
Fur coats? Oh, brother, there we get into inflation.
Oh, that's Leroy. Huh? He's probably got his arms full.
Yeah.
I'll let him in.
Yeah. Oh, close it, Leroy. Close it.
Here's the wood. Where'll I put it?
On the dining room table would be very nice.
Wise guy. Quick, move the fire screen, Bertie.
There.
Can I light the fire on?
Before we do that, young man, let's get down the cellar and start the furnace. I want to teach you how to take out the ashes.
Holy smokes, do I have to do all the work around here?
Oh, no.
I don't see what you had to go and change the furnace to coal for anyway. The oil was working all right. There wasn't any ashes. You didn't have to get up in the morning and shake it. It never went out. It was swell.
It was swell, all right. It was a comfort and a convenience. But we're going to have to give up our conveniences, Leroy. There isn't going to be enough oil to go around this winter. That's why we're burning coal. Doesn't have to come so far, so it's easier to get.
Well, it's no easier for me, I can tell you that.
Look here, young man. You want to help in this war, don't you?
Well, sure I do. I'd go right out and join the Navy. They'd let me. Why, so would I.
Me too. Did I say that?
I think we all want to help. But I'm too old to join, Leroy, and you're too young. We've just got to help in the only way we can, and here at home. So remember, every time you carry out a load of ashes, you're in the fight as much as the next man.
Well, how about you getting in it too, Unc?
Even me? I'll get up in the mornings and wrestle with the furnace if it kills me. And I don't have to tell you, young man, when Uncle Throckmorton gets up off his pants, this country is really all out.
Put it there, Unc.
Yeah.
Let's go down and shake the insides out of that furnace.
Very good. Yeah. Ah, the heat's beginning to come up. I'll have it as warm as toast here in a jiffy, Marjorie.
Now remember, Uncle Mort, 65.
Yeah, that's as warm as most toast. The only trouble is, if this cold snap lasts 3 days, we'll be out of coal. I'd better call up and order some more.
Yes, you better.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, I should have done this before, my dear. Hello? Summerfield Coal Company? I want a ton of coal delivered to my house this afternoon. In a week? That's a fine way to run a coal company. What's your name? Flanahan. Well, this is Gildersleeve. No wonder you're such a rotten water commissioner. You spend all your time peddling coal. Well, now you listen here, Flanahan. I want a ton of coal delivered to my house before the day is over, if you have to bring it yourself. And furthermore, I want that hole in my front yard filled in. Water commissioner, if my pipes freeze up, I'll sue you. I guess I told him. Hello? Why, you... He hung up.
What did he say, Uncle Mort?
Yeah, nothing fit for ladies' ears, my dear. Wasn't even fit for mine. Where's Leroy?
Oh, he's over shoveling off Mrs. Ranson's walk.
Oh, Mrs. Ranson, eh? Maybe I ought to go help him.
He doesn't need any help, Uncle Mort. He's getting paid for it, you know.
Oh, say, I wonder if she's got any heat over there. I wonder what kind of a furnace she's got.
I really couldn't say, Uncle Mort.
I wonder if it's been converted. Be terrible if it hasn't.
Terrible?
Yeah. Maybe it's been converted and she hasn't got any coal. Oh, that would be just as bad.
Yes, it would.
Or maybe she's got coal and doesn't know how to start the furnace.
Uh-huh.
All alone there with no man in the house.
Yes.
Do you know what she ought to have?
Yes, a man.
No, some firewood. Maybe I ought to call up and order her some, huh?
Don't you think you ought to find out whether she's got any first?
Oh, that's a great idea, Marjorie. I'll go over there myself and find out. Thanks for the tip.
Oh, don't thank me. You were going anyway.
Where's my overcoat? Oh, here it is, right in the closet.
Button up tight now.
You know, I think I'll take her a few sticks of firewood just in case. I'll take these logs Leroy brought in.
There goes our fire.
Oh, my hat. Put it on my head, will you, my dear?
She likes you better in your air raid helmet.
I'll have the hat if you don't mind. You don't have to put it on at such a rakish angle. Put it on straight.
Oh, you look sweet that way. There you are. I'll open the door for you.
Thank you, my dear. Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go.
Hey,
the horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and riveting snow.
Hey, Marge, where's he going?
He's going next door to warm up Mrs. Ransom.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in a few seconds. Meantime, plenty of energy is mighty important these busy wartime days. For hard work, yes, and for hard play. Of course, energy comes from the foods you eat, so it's important that you know which foods provide the most energy. Now, one of the very best energy foods you can serve, and one that's economical too, is delicious parquet margarine made by Kraft. That's a good thing because parquet margarine is a 3 times a day source of important food energy. Parquet is a grand tasting spread for bread, rolls, or toast at breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's a real flavor shortening for baking better tasting pastries, cakes, and cookies. Parquet is grand for pan frying, too, because it doesn't spatter or stick to the pan. And besides furnishing energy, every pound of parquet margarine provides 9,000 units of important vitamin A. So, why not give delicious, economical parquet margarine a try in your household? Remember, it's parquet. P-A-R-K-A-Y. Parquet margarine made by Kraft.
parquet margarine.
Butter parquet.
And there would be bump, but there'd be a crown on your head. Was that a different one, or was that parquet? Remember?
For some reason, I remember like putting your hand in it or something.
No. I remember them saying. King.
Was that Imperial margarine?
Oh, Imperial was the one with the king. Yeah.
Which one had the crown on your head?
I think that was Imperial.
That was Imperial, yeah.
Oh, wasn't parquet?
Yeah. Parquet was the one that talked to you.
Right. The little butter.
Butter.
Oh, parquet.
Parquet.
Your butter. Parquet.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, those were good, too.
I
think the best one was the crown, though. You know,
Yeah,
I like those a lot. All right. Well, that is the first portion.
Where's your crown?
I'm going to give you a crown. I'm going to crown you. All right.
That's the first portion
of The Great Gildersleeve. And, Gildy's unhappy with Summerfield's water commissioner.
You know
who becomes the water commissioner, don't you?
Yeah, Gildersleeve.
Yes, he does. Yeah. All right, we'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Stick around. I want to take a moment to thank our listeners for a lot of different things, but one thing in particular is that they have been texting in a lot tonight, and Lisa has been up. She stayed up. She has not fallen asleep. Normally, Roger will attest to this. She takes a siesta. She gets in a little fetal position there in the corner.
Now, I like to go under naps. The desk and just under, take a little
yeah,
rest.
Yeah, she naps mm-hmm. while these shows play.
Power naps.
Yeah, but
power
when naps. You text in, when the listeners text in, yeah. she has no chance to do that. She has to sit there and read the text.
Is that what I do, Roger? Do I take power naps under the desk?
Boy, I've got a newscast to put together.
So I want to thank our listeners.
If anybody's sleeping and snoring around here, it's you-know-who out on the you-know-what out in the green room.
Fill in the blanks. I don't know what you're talking about.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Battish. And we are back. This is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Every single Saturday and Sunday, we are here to present your favorite golden age of radio shows. And many people that are listening to this show have discovered classic radio, like you, Lisa, like Roger and I. We weren't around when these shows aired originally in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. But many of our listeners, I would say a large portion of our listeners, have discovered these shows one way or the other. And it's so much fun to hear from you. Let us know what your favorite shows are. I know there's a lot of people that like suspense, so that's why we play a lot of suspense. We play Gunsmoke, Dragnet, Abbott and Costello, Boston Blackie, that's one of my favorites, Johnny Dollar. We love hearing from you. Whatever you want to hear, we would love to play it for you. I know we get a lot of requests for You Bet Your Life. We have some Groucho Marx coming up within the next few weeks, I think. Fibber McGee and Molly is another big favorite of people. I know Roger, that's one of his favorite, Fibber yep. McGee and Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have it all. We have Sherlock Holmes. We have the detectives, the mysteries, the westerns. That's what we like to do here every Saturday and Sunday night. And I know Lisa likes Lucille Ball. That's your favorite,
that's one
right?
of them. I like Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah.
I like my favorite husband.
Because you were trying to be a ventriloquist as a kid, right?
I had
dreams about it, right?
I wouldn't say I was trying to be one. It was just a passion, for fun. I grew up having these dolls, so I, used them. And
right.
And there were quite a few of them on America's Got Talent. There seems to be a resurgence in ventriloquism. God, what's the guy's name who won? And now he has
Terry
Fader.
Yeah.
And now he's in Vegas. I saw his show twice, actually. He's unbelievable. And now that little girl won. You probably don't know her. She won America's Got Talent as well. She's 10, 11, 12 years old.
Yeah, she's
a ventriloquist as well. And she does a whole show with it. She's a comedian and a ventriloquist. She sings and she's put together a whole show. She's quite talented.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if I had a doll, what it would be.
Like, don't.
Like a kind of
a doll?
Ventriloquist doll. If I was a ventriloquist, what kind of a doll would I have?
I'm not going to answer that question.
I'd probably do like an old man doll.
I don't think you would.
You'd be like a crabby old man.
I think she'd be a very attractive young woman.
No, my doll would be like a crabby old man.
No, she'd be a
what do you think, Roger? That'd be funny,
woman.
Right? Well, there's that guy that has a crabby old one-man doll, doesn't
he?
Oh,
that's right. Yep. He does the right? Southern redneck kind of
voices.
He's got like
and he's all crinkled up.
His face. Yeah.
So I can't do that because he already sold my idea.
And the little girl has the pretty blonde-haired girls.
She has like princesses and things.
So that's a question, Roger. If you had a dummy.
Don't answer
that. That's a loaded question right there.
Wow.
If you had a dummy, what would your dummy be?
Me?
You'd be yourself? You'd be yourself.
I'd be my
Darcy
own dummy.
Oh, Darcy Lynn, thank you.
I have great experience at that.
Yeah.
Being my own dummy.
Would it be, you know, would it be a, what would it be? Would it be like a boy or a girl doll? Or?
I might do, you know what? I might do an old Jewish guy.
That's a good idea.
I can do the voice.
Yeah, that's great. Lisa, what about you?
Oh,
If you had a dummy besides me, you have a dummy, me.
I have you. I'm going to leave it at that.
Who needs any more?
Who could ask for anything more?
Hey, you know, while you have your hand back there, scratch right a little.
Yeah,
to the
a
left.
Little higher, a little higher.
Oh, right there. Perfect, perfect. All right, let's get back now to the Great Gildersleeve.
Now let's get back to the Great Gildersleeve. Like an angel of mercy with an armload of wood, he trudges up the walk to the Widow Ransom's door. Where whom should he meet but...
Hooker!
Gildersleeve! What mischief are you up to?
The same mischief you're up to, Horace.
I merely came over to make sure Mrs. Ransom has enough heat.
Yeah, so did I, and I've got some logs here to prove it.
I brought her a hot water bottle, so there.
Why don't you just go home, Judge? I'll take care of this.
Oh, no, you won't.
Why, Horace.
Horace.
Good morning.
And Throckmorton. Aren't you sweet to call? Come in, won't you?
After you, Throckmorton.
You said it.
Step inside so I can shut out that dreadful wind. Won't you let me take your things, gentlemen?
Allow me to hang them up.
Oh, thank you, Judge. Why, Throckmorton, what's this you brought me?
Wood for your fireplace.
For my fireplace, I declare you're the most thoughtful man.
I brought you something too, Mrs. Ransom. It's in one of my pockets here.
Yeah, the judge brought a hot water bottle in case his gout gets bad.
Well.
Hot water bottle, nothing. Blackberry cordial.
Huh?
Blackberry cordial. Oh, I just love it. It's my favorite.
You sneaky old...
How did you know it was my favorite?
You didn't say anything about that.
Why, I haven't had any blackberry cordial since I left home. Come in by the fireplace, won't you? I've been trying to start a poor little old fire here, but all I had was newspapers, and I don't know a thing about fires.
Don't you worry, Mrs. Ransom. We'll soon have it blazing for you. Let's have those logs, Gildy.
Wait a minute. They're my logs.
No, Horace gets to lay the fire because he brought the cordial.
Oh.
I declare I don't know what I'd do without you boys. Because I'm just about frozen to death here. I haven't any furnace. I haven't any coal.
You haven't any coal?
No. I just never thought to order any, and I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to come over to my house. You're going to have lunch and dinner with us and spend the night. If Margie will put you up.
Oh, Throckmorton, you're so masterful.
Oh, am I?
Well, I hope you have a good time, Leela.
Yes, she will.
Been some time since I've enjoyed a sample of Bertie's cooking.
Yes.
She's a fine cook.
You're wasting your breath, Hooker.
Of course, I haven't got any heat in my house either. But I dare say I'll get along.
Yeah, I dare say you will.
Oh, you poor thing. Throckmorton, did you hear that? The judge hasn't any heat in his house either.
Yeah, that's a shame.
I know. Let's make it a house party, shall we? Oh, how about it, Judge?
All right with me, if it's all right with Gildy.
Oh, he'd love to have you. I know he would. Just the three of us. We can have more fun.
No fudge.
Fudge. We'll make fudge.
And pull taffy.
Wonderful. Throckmorton, you think of the best parties.
Yes, don't I? All right, Hooker, you can come to lunch, but that's all.
Snow. I declare I just love
most glorious afternoon.
Yeah, me too.
You know, this is the first snow I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
By golly, I love it too. Makes me feel like a kid again.
Yeah. Oh, brother, hop on the sled, Leela, and I'll pull you.
Oh, no, I'm too heavy. You couldn't pull me.
Yeah, I can pull you with one finger. Come on, hop on.
Well, don't strain yourself now.
Yeah, that's right. I'll put up your little feet. Not you, Hooker. Come on, Hooker, get off there.
Now, boys, I don't want you to get to fighting over me. And whatever you do, don't anybody try to wash my face with snow.
Huh?
I just couldn't stand it if you were to wash my face with snow.
By George, I've got half a notion to try.
Oh, no, you won't.
Oh, yes, I will.
Oh, no, you won't.
Oh, no? Come on, Judge. You hold her and I'll wash her face.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'll hold her and you wash her face. He fell in Clanahan's hole.
Get me out of this. Get me out of this. I'm freezing to death.
Give me your hand, Judge.
Tread water, Judge. Tread water.
He doesn't have to. He's standing in mud. Come on, Judge. Jump. There.
Oh, it's cold.
Oh, Judge, you're just a mess. Now you better run right in the house before you catch your death.
Yes, come on in. Are you all right, Judge?
I'm not saying Gildersleeve till I see my lawyer.
Poor Judge fell in a hole.
Oh, stop your whining, you old goat.
Throckmorton. Now, Judge, you just lie in front of the fire till you get warm.
He's been lying there for hours. When's he going home?
Right now.
Ooh, my ankle.
Huh?
Oh, I'm afraid I've done something to it.
Oh, so it's your ankle now, is it?
I can't stand on it. Ooh!
Oh, you poor child.
Oh, the poor widow fellow.
Wiggy, 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 wiggy.
Oh, well, maybe that's the drugstore with the camp oil. I'll go.
Hooker, you're an old fake. There's nothing the matter with your ankle, and you know it.
What are you going to do about it, Gildy?
Oh, Mr. Pete.
Good evening, Mrs. Ransom.
You brought the camp oil?
Yes, all right. I trust you're not feeling indisposed.
Oh, no, it's for Judge Hooker here. He fell in a hole.
I'm sorry to hear that, Judge. How did it happen?
I was chasing. Never mind.
Hello, Peavy.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Peavy, now the judge thinks there's something wrong with his ankle. I'd like to have you take a look at it and give us your expert opinion.
Ankle, eh?
Yes, it has all the earmarks of a fracture.
Well, now, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, in other words, you think it's all right?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that either.
Well, what would you say? Would you say it's sprained?
Well, you put me in a difficult position, Mr. Gildersleeve. I'm not a physician, you know. I'm a pharmacist.
All right. You've got a license, haven't you?
Well, I'm a notary public.
It's... That's better than nothing, isn't it?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. You've got me a little mixed up.
All right, then, forget the license. Just answer me yes or no. Is there anything wrong with the judge's ankle, or isn't there?
Well, if you want to know...
Remember, Mr. Peavy, anything you say may be used against you.
Well...
Come on, Peavy, I'm just asking for your frank opinion, man to man. You are a man, aren't you?
Well, no, I would...
Neither would I. Good night. All right, Hooker, you can stay to dinner, but that's all.
My goodness gracious, 11 o'clock.
11? Oh, shank of the evening, Leela. Why, Marjorie isn't even in yet.
I must get my beauty sleep.
You couldn't be any more beautiful than you are, Leela.
That's true, Judge, but brother, is it corny?
Now, Throckmorton.
Huh?
But I really should be starting for my little old trundle bed.
Yeah, so should Hooker. Oh, I think I hear Marjorie outside. Shut the door, my dear.
Well, Marjorie, did you have a good time?
Oh, wonderful. An old-fashioned sleigh ride in October.
Certainly has put roses in your cheeks.
Yes, my dear. You look pretty enough to kiss. In fact, you look as if you had been.
Oh, welcome, Lord, with sharp eyes you have.
Yeah?
Well, I've got an early day tomorrow, so if you don't mind, I'll say goodnight. Good night, Judge.
Good night, Marjorie.
Good night, Mrs. Ransom.
Good night, honey child.
Good night, Uncle Moore.
Good night, my dear. Sorry I can't drive you home, Judge, but I put my car up on blocks.
That's all right, Gildy. I'll get home somehow.
Now you can't go home tonight with that ankle. Throckmorton, you'll have to let Judge Hooker sleep in your den or someplace.
What?
Thanks, Gildy. Awfully sorry to put you out, old man.
Well, I should be starting to bed. Could you show me my room, Throckmorton?
Could I? Let me have your satchel.
Thank you. Good night, Judge. Don't get up. I do hope your ankle will be much better in the morning.
Oh, I hope it will.
You know darn well it will.
Good night, Leela.
Good night. My, seems strange walking up these stairs with you, Throckmorton.
Does it, Leela? Seems to me very natural.
Really, Throckmorton? What do you mean by that?
How else would we get up there? here's my room, Leela. Your room.
Oh, what a nice room.
Yes, I put the bath towels here, and here's an extra pillow, and here's a nice warm quilt, and then in case it really gets chilly...
What?
I put an electric heating pad in your bed.
Well, that's just the sweetest thing I ever heard of.
If there's anything else you need...
Oh, I've got everything in my little bag, thank you.
Good night, Leela.
Good night, Throckmorton.
Sure you don't want me to tuck you in?
Why, Throckmorton, you devil, you...
Yeah, I was only joking, of course. Good night, Leela. Oh, me, what an angel. I hope I dream about her tonight. All right, Hooker, let's get to bed. You take this couch and I'll take the leather one. Is this enough blankets for you?
I suppose so.
Well, then good night. And please do me a favor.
What's that?
Don't snore.
I never do. Don't you lock the house up, Gildy?
I have.
I always go over before I go to bed to make sure.
Yeah? Well, you're a nervous old woman, you old goat.
I am not. But I know there's such a thing as burglars because I send half a dozen of them to jail every week.
Burglars? Just the idea. Can I turn the light out now?
Anytime.
Well, all right.
Oh, Gildy.
What is it?
Aren't you going to tuck me in?
Oh! I'll break your other ankle, Hooker. Now get to bed. Idea. Old goat. Oh, isn't that awful? Snoring already. Listen to that. What's that? Hooker's got me imagining things. It's probably in the cellar. Oh, my goodness, there's nobody in the cellar. Come on, Gildy, you gotta be a hero. You gotta go down there and face it. My gosh, it is a burglar, all right. He's trying to get in that cellar window, right over there by the furnace. But I'm ready for him. When he comes through, I'll hit him with his poker. Aesop, quiet. Shh, quiet, cat. Aesop, go away. Shh. Oh, here he comes. Oh! Landslide! Help! Murder! What's going on here?
Oh! You wanted coal, didn't you?
Lanahan!
You've been after me all day! You and the whole town. Well, here's your coal. You can heat yourself out in the morning.
There's something I'd like to say to all our listeners. We were lucky here in Summerfield. We had an early cold snap before the real winter set in to remind us to get ready for it while there's still time. Now, you've heard that there's going to be a shortage of fuel oil this winter, and you've probably also heard people say that there's nothing to it but a lot of talk. Well, I got the dope from the government, and this is it.
95% of the fuel oil consumed in the East used to be shipped by tanker. Now we have to ship our oil by rail. It takes 280 tank cars to carry as much oil as one ship, so you figure it out for yourself. We haven't got enough tank cars to carry all the oil where it's needed or anywhere near all. There's no shortage of oil. It's a shortage of transportation. That's why the government is telling you to convert your furnace to coal if you can. They're just trying to keep us warm, folks. And if we got any sense, we'll get going right now and do what they're telling us. Have our heating plants checked, insulate our houses, put on weather strips, anything that'll save fuel. If you haven't got the cash for it, you can borrow it from the FHA. It's really an investment, not only in improving your house and keeping your family comfortable and healthy, but you'll get some of it back in savings on your fuel bill. And you'll know that you're doing something to help our Army and Navy win this war. If that doesn't give you enough of a glow to keep you warm throughout the winter, remember, it's going to be a heck of a lot colder in Russia. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Frank Bingman speaking for the makers of Parquet Margarine and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
This program reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You know, every time I listen to the Great Gildersleeve, by the way, that was a broadcast from October 11th, 1942, starring Hal Perry. It always reminds me of when I went to a convention one year, years and years ago, when I first got interested in classic radio, and Willard Waterman was there. So Willard Waterman took over the role of the Great Gildersleeve when Hal Perry left in 1950. But Shirley Mitchell, who played Leela Ransom, you know, on the show, and she was on this particular episode, I'll never forget because she was there as well, and I auditioned to play a part. And, you know, they did a recreation of the Great Gildersleeve on stage, and a lot of people were there, and I won the audition to play Leroy. So I played, I was like, hey, Unc, you know, I was talking like that, you know, and I got to be at a microphone with Willard Waterman and Shirley Mitchell. And there was, I don't think there was anybody else from the cast, but I did other ones. I did ones with Nick Carter, Master Detective, with Lon Clark and things, but I'll never forget how beautiful of a woman Shirley Mitchell was. She was probably, I think this was probably 1990, maybe somewhere in there. So I'm guessing she was in her late 60s. And I just remember what a strikingly beautiful woman she was, and so sweet. And Willard Waterman was very tall. I remember he had to be like 6'4".
Well, compared to you, sure. Yeah. You know.
I was standing on a box and he was still a foot exactly. taller than me. But I got to play Leroy in that recreation, and I don't know if there's a copy out there of it. I wish there was, because I know it was videotaped and recorded. I remember somebody years and years ago told me that they recorded it, that they were at that and recorded it. And I was like, I would love to have a copy of that. I probably was awful on
probably.
It. But it was, I was literally standing next to Shirley Mitchell playing playing Leela. And I was the Walter Tetley role of Leroy. And then there was Willard Waterman. And I remember him saying, Leroy, you know, and all this.
Yeah.
And what a blast.
Yeah, what an opportunity.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, when we come back from the news, we will have a thrilling mystery on Murder at Midnight, starring Eric Dressler. It's a show called Death Across the Board from 1947. Ooh, you don't want to miss that. You want to get in to bed, put your pajamas on, get in bed, turn the lights down low, and pull the covers up really close.
Is that what you're going to do?
Well, no, I can't because I'm here.
You can put your pajamas on.
No, but I'm going to listen to the podcast later.
In your pajamas?
Probably. Yeah, I'll put my pajamas.
Do you wear pajamas?
No, I don't.
You don't wear pajamas?
Mm-mm.
What, do you wear anything to bed?
Well,
is that too personal?
No, I wear like a shirt,
like silk.
You know the bunny costume from the Christmas Story?
Yeah, that's right.
That's how we wear.
I'm picturing like black silk.
I wear no. I wear a sort of a red
robe.
A red silk thing, and then sometimes not the silk pants because it's too warm.
No red silk pants to go
with
it.
Well, I wear, you know, like undergarment, underwear.
Silk?
No.
Yeah, also,
I don't think so. What do you want to know all this for? This is a family radio show.
I'm just getting a picture of you in your bed in your red robe.
Yeah, and I don't wear a robe.
Is that a picture you really want to see?
No. Yeah, I mean, why would you want to?
Not really.
I don't think so.
I mean, no one else gets to see this. Why would you want to see
it? It's just a vision,
he's
you
got
know?
The round. He's got the round,
round Hugh
Hefner bed, too.
He's got the round bed with the...
No, no round bed.
I was going to continue, but I said it later right there.
But you know what, Roger? Because I sleep alone, you know this. It's sad. It's a sad story.
Yes.
It's a sad situation.
We only got an hour left of the show.
But I have a king-size bed, and I do sleep alone. And you know what?
What?
I generally wake up across the bed, not laying there. I generally wake up across the bed.
Now this is too much information. Yeah. Is your bed round?
No, it's
does
not
it have a
round.
Mirror on the top?
No.
I'm just wondering.
Does it rotate?
Regular bed.
It's a regular bed?
Regular king-size
gotcha.
Bed. But it's the one advantage of not having to have anyone in the bed.
You won't run into anyone.
You won't run into anyone.
Nobody can complain about your snoring.
Right. My snoring it goes unnoticed by anybody.
Or whatever else you might do while you sleep.
All right. Okay. Enough of that.
Okay. Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thanks, Roger. It is 8 minutes after 1 a.m. in the morning here on Sunday morning. Thanks for staying up late with us. Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. And in this hour, it's Murder at Midnight. Good, scary radio show from 1947. That is coming your way in just a few minutes. But it's time now to play our game, Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah. The Tom Hanks World War II movie.
Yep.
Okay, so the number to call, folks, is 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see the tribute to Gilda Radner, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller. Call us right now. We'll play the game. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We're back. We are going to play Crack the Quote. The movie is Saving Private Ryan, and we have Pat on the line. Hey, Pat.
Yes. How are you?
Great. Glad you're with us.
Yes.
All right. Saving Private Ryan, I've got three quotes for you. One of them is the right one from the movie. You just tell me which one that is, okay?
Okay.
All right. Number one, tears are sometimes an inappropriate response to death. Number two, some phone calls you just don't want to make. And number three, I've just learned that this afternoon their mother is getting all three telegrams.
I'd say it's number two.
Some phone calls you just don't want to make.
I am going to say number three on this one.
All right. I've just learned that this afternoon their mother's getting all three telegrams.
Yes.
All right, Chante, let's hear it.
I've just learned that this afternoon their mother's getting all three telegrams.
Well, Carl did it, but you know what? You are the winner, and we appreciate your playing, and you have won two tickets to Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago, written by Gilda's lifelong friend and Saturday Night Live writer, Ellen Zweibel. If it's Zweibel or Zweibel, I'm not sure.
Well, she would know.
She would know. I don't know him, but she knows him. And so you have won those tickets. We hope that you love the show. I heard it is a fantastic show. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks, Pat. I appreciate you. All right. Well, he's a big winner. And hey, I got one
good
right.
Good job. You did it, Carl.
Wow.
It's the
what
first one in a while. You're getting good at this.
Yeah, right. you're good at this.
I know.
You are really good at this.
Yeah. Well,
Lisa picks the quotes. She does the whole shebang.
You know what's
in the middle of a shebang donut, don't you? You know what's in the middle of a shebang donut?
The whole
shebang.
I kind of said that.
So you did good, Lisa. Very good.
Thanks. Would you expect anything less, Carl?
Actually, no. I knew it was going to be great.
Okay.
And you always are great at what you do.
Well, thanks, Carl.
So,
I work hard.
Great job. let me see. And so did we ever figure out what your dummy would be? Would it be a Charlie McCarthy dummy, do you think?
We didn't figure that out.
Yeah. Rogers is a dummy of himself.
Okay.
Mine is like an old man. No, his he was going to say was an old Jewish man, he said.
Right.
Mine was just an old guy, I think.
I don't think that's
crabby,
what it would be.
Mine would be like a crabby, cranky guy.
All right, well, if
and I would call it Vince, like my brother, because he's crabby.
Perfect.
My dummy would be Vince, the
crabby guy.
Okay.
And then who would yours be?
That's a really good question. I'm going to have to ponder over
that. Would it be a guy
that.
Or a girl?
Well, I kind of prefer men to women.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So I'm going to go with that.
That's probably good.
It could go either
Dan,
way.
You know, Dan's probably happy about that.
I just would rather spend time with males than females.
Even a dummy?
Well, you know, they're almost like your best friend. I know. How about a little puppy? Because I do love my doggy.
Yeah, but you have to do the voice. But you can
But that's
do...
already been done before. The dog's already been done before.
The yeah. dog, Cuddly yeah. Dudley.
Well, true.
That, right? That, and even before that.
Who?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I know. You're talking about the little lamb? Oh, that's a lamb.
No. That was, no, lamb that's
chop?
Lamb chop.
Lamb chop.
No, it's
a lamb.
It was, gosh, even before that, black and white TV, he did the chocolate commercial. Chocolate.
I don't know.
I don't know either. About.
It's. I'll look it up.
Okay.
But
well,
yeah, it was a ventriloquist who had a dog.
Oh, really?
All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? Everything old is new again.
That's true.
Roger.
That's true.
So
wasn't there a dog on the Ed Sullivan show too? The guy had a little puppet dog, like a little dog.
No, you're talking about the ventriloquist.
Pobo Gijo was a mouse. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
well,
the other one,
long time ago, Raj.
Yeah.
Senior Wences had a voice in a box and then did the little hand puppet thing where he drew the face on the hand.
Are you thinking of what I'm thinking of?
The little lips. The little lips.
Right.
Yeah. That's funny.
And he did the little close the door. It's all right.
It's all right. That brings back memories,
yeah.
Roger. All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what else is going to bring back memories?
What?
How about Murder at Midnight.
This was a mystery horror show. Came to ABC Radio in 1946. And Roger, dig this. Raymond Morgan. You're going to like this. You're going to like this, Roger.
Yeah.
Raymond Morgan, okay?
Yeah.
He was a former Long Island minister that left the cloth for the excitement of radio. He got like an audition. You know, he was a minister.
Right.
And they were like, hey, we need an announcer or a host on this mystery, scary show. And you have a nice deep voice. Want to try it? He was like, yeah. His name was Raymond Morgan. And he was, you'll hear him on the beginning of this. He's the host. He's the guy that goes, Murder at Midnight. And
who
then
wouldn't
he,
want to
he
leave?
He liked it so much, he skedaddled.
That's a job.
But
that's
who wouldn't want
job.
To leave their career for broadcasting?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Somebody who wants to make money, perchance?
Yeah. And this was broadcast out of New York. It had New York's best supporting actors like Lawson, Zerbe, Carl Swenson, fellow Carl, Lon Clark, Barry Kroger, Raymond Edward Johnson. You know, I got to meet Raymond Edward Johnson. Did I ever tell you that, Roger?
No, I don't think you have.
He was at one of these conventions. Later in life, he suffered MS.
Oh.
And okay. He came to this, to the convention. It was probably 1990 or so. They had him in a bed. He was in a bed.
What?
Yeah. They brought him his nurse, and he was at this convention in a bed. And we all gathered around the bed, and we got to meet him and talk to him. And
then he did
a reading. He did, like, he loved poetry.
Uh-huh.
And he did a reading for everyone with a microphone on the stage. It was amazing.
That's very cool.
Raymond Edward Johnson, who was Raymond, your host on Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
A quick note, Roger. We had a texter that says Roger is thinking of Farfel. Is that right?
Was it Farfel?
It's F-A-R-F-E-L.
Yeah.
Is that
right? I haven't had a chance to look it up yet. I'll get back to you on that.
All right.
Okay.
I've got to research. I'm visualizing it, but I can't get the name.
Gotcha.
But right now it's time for Murder at Midnight. This is a show called Death Across the Board. Let's go back to August 15th, 1947, part one, Murder at Midnight.
Murder.
This is where he phoned from, and
Good Lord, there he is, lying under the call box.
Dead?
His throat cut from ear to ear. And there, look, huh? Right next to him.
Another of those devilish chess men.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a moment in Death Across the Board. And now, Murder at Midnight, Tales of Mystery and Terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Robert Newman is Death Across the Board. It's about 11 o'clock on a sultry summer evening, and Dr. John Strand is standing in front of the window of a pawn shop in the oldest part of the city. There is the usual collection of odds and ends on display, and also some items that are rather unusual. On a sudden impulse, he pushes open the door and goes in.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Is there anything I can do for you?
No, thank you. If you don't mind, I'd just like to look around.
By all means. I just thought that if there was something in particular you were looking for, I have some very fine glassware. Hobnail, flint, and sandwich glass?
No, thank you. I don't go in for glass collecting. Hello, this chess set. Very interesting one. And a very interesting game you're playing.
My dear sir, you have no idea how interesting.
Whose move?
White's.
Oh, well, then White should win in 6 moves.
That, sir, is very much open to question.
Well, perhaps we can play sometime. How much for this set?
Oh, I'm awfully sorry, but it is not for sale.
Oh, it's too bad.
Yes. However, if you are interested in chess and chessmen, I know of a set that I think might appeal to you. It is an Arabian set, 12th or 13th century ivory, reputed to have belonged to Salah ed-Din. The white pieces are Saracen warriors, and the black pieces are crusaders.
You have it here?
Unfortunately, no. But it is not very far away, and if you thought you'd like to see it...
Well, if it's not too expensive, and if you're sure it's no bother...
My dear sir, don't give it another thought. I will be most anxious for your reactions, even if you do not buy. The address is 23 Valen Place. That is down 2 blocks and 1 to your right. Ask for Felix and tell him that Raphael sent you.
23 Valen Place and ask for Felix.
I will phone him. Tell him to expect you. Your name is...
Strand. Dr. John Strand. Ah,
very good, Dr. Strand. Somehow I have the feeling that we shall see each other again.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps even have a chance to play that game you mentioned before.
Who is that? Who is there?
Felix.
I said, who is there?
My name is Strand. Raphael sent me over here. He said he'd phone you and tell
just
you...
Just a moment.
How do you do? I hope I'm not disturbing you.
Very well. Come in. Now. Hold your hands up.
What? I'm afraid there must be some mistake.
There is. You have made it. Thinking you could come here and take me in this way.
Well, but this is ridiculous.
I said hold your hands up. Keep them up.
Now look, Felix, if that is your name, will you do me a favor and call Raphael? He sent me over here to look at a chess set. And
don't move, do you hear? Stay right where you are with your hands behind your head. You so much as move. Hello? Oh, hello, Raphael. Yes, he just got here. What do you think? I shall take him into the back room. Do it there. No. No one will hear. Right. I call you back. Very well. In there.
What for?
Because I said so, that's why.
Here! What? Drop that gun! Drop it, you hear?
Oh, my wrist! I should have killed you right away!
Okay, now. Now get up and tell me what this is all about. You hear me? I said get up. Felix. Dead. Hello?
Felix?
I'm sorry, he can't come to the phone just now.
Oh, Dr. Strand, congratulations.
What? Who is this?
This is Raphael. And now do you think it is possible for White to win in 5 moves?
Well, what do you mean? What in heaven's
you
name...
You killed him, did you not? Of course you killed him, or you would not be speaking to me now. May I suggest that you go through Felix's pockets, take out the most interesting thing you find there, and bring it to my shop?
What? Bring it... Hello. Hello. Raphael. Goes through his pockets. Well, I've got to get to the bottom of this and find out what it's all about. A wallet, keys, and a chessman. A black rook. A black rook. All right, Mr. Raphael. I think perhaps I'll take you up on that. I will go back to your shop.
Good evening, sir. Can I help you?
Yes. Where's Raphael?
I'm sorry. He's not in right now, but... Are you Dr. Strand?
I am.
I'm Alice Hines. He must have been expecting you, Doctor. He asked me to give you this.
What is it?
I don't know, but...
Another chessman. A white knight.
Oh, yes. Mr. Raphael is quite a chess player.
Yes, he's more than that. He's a murderer.
What?
Or at least he has friends who are.
What do you mean?
I mean just that. He sent me to see someone, a man named Felix, to look at a chess set. And when I got there, this Felix pulled a gun on me, and when I tried to get it away from him, it went off and killed him.
Oh, no!
Oh, don't look so surprised and innocent. You work for him. You must know what it's all about. And that's what I came back here to find out before I call the police.
There must be some mistake. Some horrible mistake.
Yes.
I've only been working here for a few weeks, but he's been very nice to me. Kind and considerate.
A mistake, eh? Then why did he phone Felix while I was there? How did he know he'd been killed? Why did he laugh about it and tell me to come back here?
I don't know, but I can't believe that about him. I won't.
No, well, we'll see what the police have to say about it. Where's your phone?
Back there. But if you're serious about it, you don't have to bother calling them.
Why not?
Riley just went past here a few minutes ago. But there he is, up at the corner.
Fine, that'll save some time. Officer! Officer, would you come here a minute?
Oh!
Good Lord, someone shot him.
That woman hiding behind that car there. The woman in black. And she's coming in here.
Don't just stand there. Get inside and shut the door.
You. You shot Riley. Killed him just like that.
Yes, 6 months I've been waiting, trying to find out who got my Ben. Now he'll rest in peace. Where's Raphael?
Raphael?
Yeah, it was him that got the dope for me. Told me how to knock the cop off, and he told me to come in here afterwards.
Well, Miss Hines?
I still can't believe it. I can't.
You can't believe what? Why are you looking at me so funny? Say, whose side are you on anyway?
Not ours, my dear. What? Not on our
who's
side.
That?
Ah, so that's it. I just took it for granted that... Okay, get your hands up and keep them up. What'll I do with them, Raphael?
I leave that to you, my dear. After all, they are witnesses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
May I recommend the cellar right through that door there? It's quite secluded and quiet.
Yeah, okay. Get moving.
I repeat, Miss Hines, well...
It's mad. Fantastic. What are you going to do to us?
You can't be that dumb, baby face. 6 months I've been wearing black for the only guy I ever loved. Finally, I got the guy that got him. You think I'm going to leave the two of you around to put the finger on me?
You mean you're going to kill us? But you can't.
No. Seems to me I did a pretty neat job on that flatfoot. After all, they can't burn you more than once, can they? Okay, open that door and go on down.
Allow me, madam.
Never mind, wise guy. You go down first and then babyface.
Well, it's not very good manner.
No, I'm not going to let you do it. Give me that gun. Look out, you fool. Look out, or I'm...
down there after her. And hurry. Watch her while I get the gun. Oh, that was nice work. I was going to try to take her myself.
I didn't mean to do it. I was just trying to get the gun, but she tripped, fell. Oh, Dr. Strange.
Yes?
Why is she lying there so funny? Her head.
Wait a minute. Let me see. Oh, her neck's broken. She's dead.
Oh, no. That means I killed her.
Not any more than it means I killed Felix. Well, Miss Hines, I think you must believe me now. I ask you for the last time, do you know what's behind all this?
I told you, I don't. Mr. Rayfield was always wonderful to me, and he... Oh, look. They are lying next to her. He must have fallen out of her bag. Isn't that another chess piece?
Yes, the Black Queen.
He gave me one, just like it, when I first came to work for him. Only it was a white one.
What?
Yes, a white one.
Black Queen, White Knight, and... No, it's impossible. And still...
What is it?
It's too incredible. But I've just gotten an idea. A mad, fantastic idea that... Come on, we're going to the police.
Go ahead, Dr. Strand.
Mr. Rayfield!
By all means. But remember, it's my move now.
Rayfield's move. With three pieces removed from the board already, three corpses, and the hands of the clock still moving toward the witching hour, and more.
Murder at midnight.
I'm scared, Lisa.
You scary should be show. Scared.
Being next to you makes me scared.
Yeah, I'm pretty scary. I get
I know,
that.
You are scary. You're very, very scary. That is the first portion of Death Across the Board from 1947 on Murder at Midnight. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa. What have you seen lately at the...
What have you done for me lately?
What have you seen... you just went to a show, right?
I went to see Love Never Dies, which is a sequel to Phantom. It's playing at the Cadillac Palace Theater, part of the Broadway in Chicago series.
Yeah. Was it fantastic?
You know, you got to be a Phantom fan. It's yes. also Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's his right. music, his show. I don't think it was as good as Phantom of the Opera. I don't think it can be. But if you are a fan of Phantom, then you will enjoy the show. And I am a fan. So, yeah. Like I said, it wasn't as good as the original. I'm not sure anything could be. But we still enjoyed it nonetheless.
Well, good.
Yeah.
All right. So, it was at Broadway in Chicago.
It well,
I mean, that's who put it on.
Broadway it was Broadway in Chicago. Yeah. It's at the Cadillac Palace
yeah.
Theater just
that's
for a few
theater.
Weeks only. So if you love Phantom of the Opera, go and see it.
And check it out.
Yeah, all the same characters.
All right, ready to get back to this scary radio play?
Definitely.
Let's hear the conclusion now of Death Across the Board on Murder at Midnight.
And now back to Murder at Midnight and Death Across the Board. It's about a half hour later, and sitting in the office of Police Chief Adams, Dr. Strand has just finished his account of everything that has happened. There is silence for a minute. And then, without looking at either Strand or Alice, Adams says,
"So, you each bumped someone off, eh? And you've come here to give yourselves up."
No.
No, we certainly didn't come here to give ourselves up. I told you that in both cases it was self-defense. We're here because there's a madman loose, a homicidal maniac, and you've got to do something about him.
A guy that just goes around bumping people off for fun, eh? Or rather gets other people to do his killing for him.
Oh, no, there's much more to it than that. Much more.
Yeah? What?
Well, it just came to me a little while ago.
Well, that's nice.
There was something strangely familiar about this Rayfield. Did you ever hear of Rayfield Norbert?
No.
He was one of the greatest chess players in the world. Won practically every tournament in the books. And then about 5 years ago, he disappeared. Well, I believe he's playing another chess game now, the maddest game that ever was. Is there a map of the city around here?
Yeah, right there on the wall.
Now, let me see. Now, here's Rayfield's shop. Yes. This would be it. This section of the city here, 8 blocks each way, this is his chessboard.
And human beings, people like Alice and me, are his chessmen.
What?
John!
I know it sounds fantastic, but I think it's true.
Oh.
Now, when he sent me to Felix's, he told me to go down two blocks and one to the right. That's a knight's move. In other words, he had cast me as one of the white knights in his insane, murderous game.
Oh.
Alice was the white queen, he himself was the black king, and so on.
He just lined up all these people, said, you play this piece, you play that.
Oh, no, no. That was the beauty of the game, the fascinating, exciting part to him. No one knew that they were playing in it but he. Felix didn't know that he was a black rook any more than I knew I was a white knight. But Raphael's black pieces were all criminals of some sort who wouldn't hesitate to kill. And it was by killing that one piece took another. You see, that was the ultimate refinement of the game. He could plan a move, but he had no way of telling which piece would take which.
What do you mean?
Now, for instance, I killed Felix instead of his killing me. In other words, Raphael was not only playing his game against law and order, against society, but he was matching his brain against that of every other piece in the game.
Against law and order, eh? I got this in the mail a couple of weeks ago without any letter or anything like that. How would this fit in with your theory?
The White King. Of course. That means he's playing this game principally against you.
Now, do you believe us, Mr. Adams? Do you?
I don't know. I suppose it's possible. We've been having a funny kind of crime wave lately. Killings without any apparent motive and... Excuse me. Hello?
Hello, Chief. Valenti speaking.
Yes, Valenti.
I'm down the corner of 3rd and Sycamore, and there's something kind of screwy going on.
Hello? Hello? Valenti!
What's the matter?
One of our detectives down at 3rd and Sycamore, and it sounded like somebody got him. Now make sure about this before you answer, but would this be part of what you were talking about?
Well, let's look at the map again. 3rd and Sycamore, that would be in the area. That's Raphael's chessboard. Yes, I think it is.
Okay, come on. We're going down there and see.
There he is, lying next to the call box.
Yeah. He's dead. Stabbed.
John.
Yes?
Mr. Adams. John? Look there, lying next to him. Another chess piece.
Yeah.
Yes, a pawn. A white pawn. Why, of course. If you're the white king, then all your men would be pawns.
Pawns, huh? They're the pieces that get pushed around, aren't they?
Well, they're the ones that are usually sacrificed.
Two of my men, Riley and Valenti. Okay, Strand, if this Raphael wants to play, I'll play with him.
Then you do believe us.
Yes. You're a chess player, Strand. Do you think you can figure out what this Raphael character is going to do next and tell me how I can meet him?
I might. I only got a very quick look at the board, but if I could remember the location of the pieces...
You mean he's actually got a board set up showing where all the pieces, everybody is?
There's one set up on a little table right next to his desk. No one's allowed to touch it.
That's the one. I think I remember the position of the pieces that were left, but some moves may have been made since I saw it
last.
Well,
what are we fooling around here for? Let's go to the shop and make sure.
That's the store, right there.
Well, it's all dark. Doesn't look as if anyone's there. Locked, all right. You have a key, haven't you, Alice?
No. Raphael never gave me one. He always locked up himself.
Well, what do we do?
Two of my men killed, and you ask me a question like that? You think I'm going to play legal and wait for a search warrant? Look out. Okay. Now... Where's the light?
Right here. There's the chessboard, over there.
Yes, I know. Let's take a look at it.
This all there is to the place?
Except for the cellar. She must still be down there. The woman in black...
We'll go down there later. Well, Strand?
Well, at the moment, black seems to have the edge on us. Several moves have been made, and we've lost several pieces, but we've still got a fair chance.
Oh, the devil with winning that game. Where's this Raphael guy, the black king, and what's he going to do next?
Well, now, wait a minute. Just give me another minute or two, will you? The black king is still in his own square, which would seem to mean that he's still here someplace. But the thing is, I'm not sure whose move it is now.
No, I don't understand. I am still here, and it's my move.
What in thunder?
There's Raphael speaking over some kind of a loud speaker system, maybe from the cellar.
All right, I'm going to see. I'll find out.
Oh, my God! Oh, John!
Oh, Alice. Alice, where are you?
Here. Right here.
Are you all right?
I think so. What was it? What happened?
Well, he must have had the place mined or set a booby trap. And when Adams went to open the cellar door, he... Where is Adams?
I'm not sure, but I think he's over there.
I must have some matches someplace. Yes, here. Oh, under that beam there.
Oh.
Help me lift it off.
All right. Oh, help.
Okay. Adams.
Is he?
No, but he's badly hurt and losing blood. We've got to get him to a hospital fast. Now watch it. This way. The emergency ward is right in there.
How do you know?
Well, I ought to. I interned here. It's funny there's no one around. Now, put him right there on the table.
All right.
Easy. That's it. Hello. This is Dr. Strand speaking from the emergency ward. I have a very severe accident case here. Is there anyone around who can take care of him? What about surgery? Crandall? Oh, fine. Will you ask him to get down here as soon as possible? Thanks. Chap I used to know has just finished an operation. He'll be down right away.
There'll still be time?
Yes, I think so. We'll have to give him a transfusion once we get him patched up. Now, I'd better rustle up a sterile uniform for myself in case Crandall needs a hand. If I remember, they used to keep them in here.
Isn't there anything I can do?
Just keep an eye on him. The tourniquet particularly. It'd be just too bad if he lost any more blood.
Right. He's still unconscious, but I think...
That you, Crandall? I'm awfully glad you're here. Pretty serious case. Adams, chief of police. An explosion.
Oh?
There's no time to go into the whole story now. But if we don't work fast, we may lose him. I only had a chance to make... What are you doing?
Removing the tourniquets.
No, wait. I'm not ready with the ligatures yet. You're not Crandall. You're Rayfield.
What?
Right, Dr. Strand. Raphael Norbert. Dr. Crandall is still in surgery. Locked in, as a matter of fact. I put on this mask and gown not because I thought it would fool you, but because, well... Somehow it just seemed appropriate.
But it can't be you. You were in the shop.
No, Dr. Strand. If you're thinking of my voice, as you guessed, it was coming over a loudspeaker system from next door. And if you're thinking of my position on the chessboard, you forget that I had not made my move yet. Huh? You probably expected a Brodsky endgame. That would have been the classical move. But I played a variation of it.
You cast
right.
What?
I know you do not play chess, my dear Miss Hines. Castling is a move in which the king changes places with one of the castles or rooks. It was a move which brought me here to the hospital waiting for you.
Mr. Rayfield, I don't know why you've done everything you have, and I don't care, but you've got to let us do something about Mr. Adams. All that blood he's losing.
Yes, Rayfield, for heaven's sake.
No, do not move, either of you. I do not want to have to shoot, but I sincerely hope it will not be necessary. After all, when the chief dies, the game will be over. And the most interesting game it has been.
But haven't there been enough deaths already?
Oh, you are very sentimental, my dear. I'm afraid you would never make a good chess player. Pieces have been taken, that's all.
But suppose we just give up. Say you've won.
That's right, Raphael. We'll concede you the game, but let me do something about Adams. There's still time. I've got everything ready here, all the instruments.
No, Dr. Strand. This is one game I will not concede. That I insist on having played out to the last move.
Well, if that's the way you want it, all right. And if I'm not mistaken, it's my move now. And here! The formaldehyde won't help them any. Get his gun, Alice!
Yes.
Watch him while I get these tourniquets back on Adams.
Do you think you can still save
him? Yes, his pulse is weak, but I think we can still save him. As for you, Rayfield, you made one bad mistake. You forgot that three of us came to your shop. The White King, White Queen, and White Knight. That would put you in check. And you can't castle when you're in check.
I bow, Dr. Strand. I felicitate and congratulate you. But if I am to lose, I prefer to lose in my own way.
Look out, Alice! Watch out!
He went through the window. Shall I call the police? Get them to go after him?
No. There's a railroad underpass right outside. A drop of about 60 feet.
I think that's game, match, and tournament.
One last move, and the game is over. Over as we like to have all our stories end, with a final...
Murder at midnight!
Remember to be with us again when death moves his black chessmen and the clocks strike 12 for
Murder at Midnight.
The part of Dr. John Strand was played by Eric Dressler. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
That is Murder at Midnight from August 15th, 1947, Death Across the Board, Eric Dressler. And that was Raymond Morgan as host on that show. And Raymond Morgan, he was the Long Island minister, Lisa, who left the cloth for the excitement of radio. And you left the
exciting
world of being...
Of being what?
You were an advertising executive. You were a big wig.
I was.
Dave, she was big wig over here.
Big wig.
Yeah, I'm the little fish here.
She was Kraft. One of her accounts was Kraft Foods.
Wow.
That was my only account.
Big wig, by the way, is a term must be from our generation, because I have people make fun of me. The young kids that work for me all the time.
They don't know.
I said, we're going to go schmooze. She's like, what is schmooze?
What does schmooze mean?
Oh, schmooze is a great word, because there's no word like it.
No, there isn't. But then she says, let me look up what schmooze means. And she goes, hobnob. What the hell is hobnob? So now she uses that. Oh, hey, let's go hobnob.
I love schmooze.
Yeah.
I'm a good schmoozer.
You know, she was the big executive on Kraft, and that's why she eats a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese pretty much every day.
You wouldn't look like that if you were eating mac and cheese.
They paid her in Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Honestly, if we're being clear here, my product was Philadelphia brand cream cheese.
Oh,
we called it PBCC.
All right, very good.